To the Serious TV Drama Podcast. I'm Scott, and joining me this week, the folksy dope to my hokey mope, it's Dan. Hey, Dan.
Good evening, Scott. What's up?
My ire, that's what's up, no.
Thanks, I like that.
Oh, well, you know, well, I unlike last week, I will spare our listeners me whining about my recent bout of injuries that I'm going to be recovering from for the rest of the summer, I suppose. But yeah, I'm getting through it. You know,
sweet.
When I listened back to a little bit of the previous podcast, and I can actually hear where I'm wincing as I'm talking at certain spots. I was like, going, oh yeah. How did I not scream out loud on the podcast at that point? Because I remember it was like I had shifted around in the chair without thinking about it. And maybe I go, oh God. Anyway, but again, we are not here to listen to me whine. We are here to talk about the latest episode of Loki. But before we dive into that specific episode, and by the way, I decided to, the way I'm going to go about things this week, I decided to jot down random thoughts when I was watching the episode. I've kind of done this a few times in the past. It's almost like reading from a tweet stream or something. And that's probably what I'll be using as the foundation of, my spiel as we go through the podcast. Cause, you know, here on the STVD podcast, we're all about transparency. We pull back the curtain. We show you how the sausage is made, and now you can make a joke about sausages if you like that.
We make good sausage here in Wisconsin, very good sausages.
Yes, you are known for the sausages, and maybe even the sausages. No, we are the ugly truth here. Anyway, what was I saying? Oh, yeah, I wanted to mention something before we start talking about the episode. There was an interesting article I read several days ago. I believe it was on inverse.com. So I want to make sure they're credited, and that way if you guys want to track it down and read it yourself, feel free. The main point of the article was talking about what they're doing with Loki on this series and really how significant an achievement it is. And they even likened it to I think they likened it to a few other MCU projects, and the one that really kind of stood out for me when they were talking about it was how the MCU has treated and what they've done with Captain America, from like Captain America the Winter Soldier all the way through to, I guess, even right up to the last couple Avengers movies. And what I'm talking about is the complete deconstruction of a character. When you strip away all of that which makes them pretty much what they have been, what they would identify as. Like with Captain America, and again, it really kind of starts with, you can say it starts with Winter Soldier plot-wise because of what happens in modern day. You know, one could take it back to First Avenger because, you know, when you wake up 70 years later, whatever that was at that point, you know, obviously you lose a lot too, but that's not what I mean. With Winter Soldier and from that point on, it was about the loss of things, you know, of faith, of honor, and the things that he stood for and the organization that he worked for, you know, they turned out to be corrupt or they turned out to abandon him when his ideals, you know, as he pushes forward, start to seem to mean nothing. And he is eventually then seen as a fugitive and a criminal by the very country he has always stood for. And that was, and one of those things, the more I thought about it, I was like, wow, I always said the Captain America films, in fact, I think everyone I know who's, you know, has a working brain and likes the MCU, mostly agreed that the Captain America films tend to be the best, are the best of all the MCU branches, I would say. But to get to Loki and what they do in the series, the idea was, if I'm remembering correctly, it was kind of like along the sense of, you know, you take a character, you know, who's obviously played a major part in the MCU, and he's well, you know, he's a god, but you strip away his power, you strip away his sense of importance in the universe. You basically strip away everything with him. You start anew, and when you rip away, you know, his ego and his arrogance, and then you actually are replacing it with almost a sense of vulnerability, which had not really been something about Loki for the most part. Certainly not the Loki that we had up through the first Avengers movie.
Yeah, it is comparable to what Thor went through in his first movie, though. So that's kind of cool.
They actually, you know what? That is one of the other examples they talked about with Thor. Not so much the first movie, though. It was almost more comical the way they talked about it. It might have even goes all the way over to Ragnarok, where with some of the ideas that. In my mind humorously refer to it, the director and writer and, you know, kind of semi genius, take away a titty. that's what I'm always going to call him, dude. So what's the big thing about Thor that you think of when you think of that character through the comics all the way through through the movies? Like, you know, think of this big Herculean god with this amazing long hair and the hammer. Hey, you know what we're going to do? We're going to take away that hair. Hey, you know what else we're going to do? We're going to take away that hammer. And you realize, oh, here's Thor without his long hair, without his hammer. And it's obviously to a certain extent a more of a cosmetic deconstruction. But then that's taken much further once we get past Ragnarok into the Avengers movies, when you find Thor being kind of, just shut off from society except for his computer video game playing alien friends, and he's developed, you know, the beer gut, and he's just checked out of society. It's one of those things. I start to want to give the MCU a lot more credit than I might have before when I think of how they've really a really good job they've done with a lot of their characters throughout these movies. Even when there are movies in the mix that I don't necessarily like, at least there's enough there around them that I can love Robert Downey Jr. and what they did with the Iron Man character, even if I hate Iron Man 2 and 3. Although there are a few little good things that are in both of those two movies as well, and then we can pick up with the really cool stuff with him, like in these Avengers movies, or even in the Spider-Man movie that he appeared in. So it's as much as you're going to hear, you know, a tried and true DC guy gush about Marvel, but it's just, I just had me really admiring what they had done with all these characters. And then to bring it back to Loki and what they're doing here. And even though we saw, and we've talked about, how from Dark World and then especially into Ragnarok, you see that Loki has these little redemptive moments. And I guess it's in Ragnarok, correct me if I'm wrong, where he actually, at a certain point, even starts working with Thor, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, so to a certain degree. At a certain point, at least. But and we see that, and of course, we're right up until what happens on the ship with Thanos before he dies, whatever. But I think it's something, one of the hallmarks of this series, and what we saw in that very first episode, was we're dealing with a version of Loki that hasn't gotten to that point yet, but he gets to experience it when he sees that file on him and what he's been going through when he realizes that it's not about him being a god so much. He's just one speck in this gigantic universe of the sacred timeline. And the fact that even the fact that there are all these variants of him, almost, even if he doesn't say it, almost kind of, trims down the value of a Loki, because there's so many of them. He's not unique. He's not the one Loki. You know, we get the impression there may have been hundreds of Lokis. Who knows? So, I don't know. Just thought I'd kick off things with that semi rambling thing.
That sounds like an interesting article.
Yeah. It doesn't, you know, there's a very good chance I was more interested in the article just now. Nah, I doubt that. All right. So now on to the episode. So let's sift through this one. I will say before we even get started, and I'll also to get your opinion on it as well. I have gotten the sense that there's a bit of a consensus out there that at least of these first four episodes, the consensus is that this is the best of the first four episodes. I'm kind of leaning that way myself. Although, I mean, I do love the very first episode that establishes things, even though it's, you know, as exposition heavy as any first episode of any show ever. But I think this might have been the best episode of the first four.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay.
But, you know, but it also kind of has the thing, like the first three are kind of set up for this one. And then since they paid, you know, since it paid off, you know, that kind of makes this one better. But it still, like, you know, needs those other components. That's good,
and that's absolutely correct, I think that's actually why it's like when during the countdown of the greatest TV episodes, blah blah blah, once or twice I had a bit of a conversation where I talked about the fact that there are a number of season finales that show up in a countdown like that. And I say, well, a lot of that's because whatever's been building for an entire season is paid off quite often in the finale of the season. In some cases, it might be the penultimate episode, but, you know, more often than not, it's actually the final episode. With Loki, we know we're only going to get a 6-episode series here, but but this fourth episode, even though there's still two more to go, is a really satisfying payoff to a lot of what we've been building up through the first three. So and we get some really nice little character moments in a very action heavy episode. So I like that as well.
Well, yeah, in a way they've kind of like resolved like almost everything that's happened over the first few episodes already. So now you just got like two episodes of just like, okay, what the hell's going to happen now? And that's kind of cool that they did that.
Yes, absolutely. And I think we both, if there's one thing we love about any TV show we're watching, regardless of genre, it's when you, at the end of an episode, we're like, oh man, so now what are you going to do? Because it's usually one of two things I think I love when an episode ends. When an episode ends where you cannot immediately see a way out of a problem for a character, or, oh, I have no idea where you're going to go now, you know, with a plot line or a character. And they have a certain aspects of both things going on by the end of this episode. So, and I really enjoyed that a lot. So that was awesome. So when the episode kicks off and we see, I think it's like again, as I said before, I'm now going to start referring to my jotted down notes, whatever. When you have like the Minutemen snatching Sylvie from Asgard when she was a child, and I remember my reaction is going, wait, oh, I didn't know if she had said this in a previous episode or not, but I was going, Jesus Christ, she was considered a variant when she was just a kid, you know, and I was already instantly questioning it. And of course, as the episode goes on, I think we are supposed to question that. Whether we really believe that, it doesn't appear that there's any evidence of this. Is it just because, you know, the fact is, oh no, here's a Loki, we have to, you know, get rid of it. We'll get more into this as I go through the episode, but right off the bat, with that little flashback, you can already understand Sylvie's desire for revenge. You know, like right there, it's like, okay, I think she's a bit more justified than we might have really even considered. And I think also with that flashback, if we weren't already questioning things that the Ravona character had been saying, from that flashback on, we are not believing anything she's saying. I think in the early part of the episode, I think it's when she's having the one of her initial conversations with Mobius, and that's when she first says the thing about what happened with Hunter C-20. And right off the bat, I mean, it's pretty obvious. We're already like, okay, so we know that you're lying now. It's clear that you're lying. This could be a scene out of a daytime soap opera. It's so obvious that you're lying, quite frankly. So, and by her being a liar, if we didn't already believe the timekeepers in the TVA really ain't the good guys from what Sylvie revealed in the previous episode. I feel like that's pretty much confirmed within the first few minutes of this episode. That was the way I took it.
Yeah. I was kind of surprised that she was like Asgardian, actually, because I wasn't really sure what her origin was, but I thought that was kind of cool.
Right. It was interesting because it was really by showing her as a child in Asgard and where she was, it was more like, oh, she, don't forget, she really is a female version of Loki. So I really kind of got a kick out of that.
But from a different, like a different Asgard than the one that he's from, I suppose.
That's the thing I was trying to figure out early on in the episode. Because it seems like what the TVA is really doing is, it's like they're treating people like weeds in any and all realities. And they're just going to pluck them out before, these multiple alternate versions of whomever, can disrupt the sacred timeline. And I was thinking about it. It's like, well, geez, if you're going to do that, why are you even allowing any other realities beyond one to exist in the first place? Because doesn't that make anyone and everything a potential variant if that's the case? Or is it only because, you know, a creature like, say, a Loki, you know, might ascend to such abilities or power where they might do something that really might disrupt, you know, the overall reality or cause, you know, a serious nexus event or something. It was one of those things I just kept thinking about it. And I kept finding flaws in the whole TVA concept, which only is underscoring the fact that they're not what they seem. We already know at this point, they are not what they purported to be or seem to be from the get-go, which again, I find very interesting because, if this happened in the comics at some point, I have no idea. I don't know that, but I didn't expect that to be the case when I was watching that very first episode. I was looking at this as like, okay, this is like a time cop situation organization, like all the other ones that we mentioned in that podcast, you know, from all these different other fantasy and sci-fi projects. And even though there may be some, evil stuff going on within them, overall, they're not evil. Like the commission in the Umbrella Academy, I don't think the organization is evil. It was just run by someone or certain people who were kind of corrupt and were doing bad things. But I don't think by and large it was an evil organization. It was just being led by a few evil people.
Right.
Ooh, getting a little out of breath. I hurt my rib doing that. And I guess it's interesting. I think it's at this point, it was at that point in the episode. It might have been when she was, I think it was the scene between Sylvie and Loki, and my notation, I don't know if this really even was a factor for the rest of the episode, I wrote down, I feel like it's important to remember that everywhere that Sylvie goes, she essentially causes a nexus event, and hence the title, whatever. So at this point, I was assuming, you know, despite the impending apocalypse, I'm sure she's about to manage to cause one here on Lamentis, and then it kind of does happen. You know, because they see that what seems to be their moment of bonding, you know, together there. You know, I think they even make physical contact or something. That's what causes that spiking branch on the sacred timeline, which alerts them to where they are. And then, you know, they're able to go get them through those two portals. I'll also admit that the chemistry I didn't quite get between them in the third episode, I felt more apparent in this fourth episode. So I found it interesting that I could actually change my opinion on that from episode to episode. I don't know if it's just the tone made it different or I don't know. I'm not sure why that happened, but that's the way I felt at least watching it. But the funny thing is like, okay, what's causing the big spike? And you realize, oh, Is it the fact that this is the moment that these two have fallen for each other? And I love when later on in the episode, when Mobius is going on about that, because I think we might have joked about this in a previous podcast too, I don't remember. Just the idea. So Loki, you're in love with yourself. That's about right. I mean, we already, before the series, I think we would have thought of Loki as being a pretty damn narcissistic character to begin with. And that's about as narcissistic as you get. You know, it's all about self-love, you know?
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I like it.
So when they're captured, and then that's when I love the fact we go back. It's almost like, you know, back to the beginning where it's Mobius and Loki together again. That's where we get that great little back and forth about when Loki senses Mobius is gonna, you know, make some series of wisecracks about him, and when he calls him a folksy dope. I just love the phrase folksy dope so much. That's why I used it in our intro. But I like the back and forth, and you know, it was just, again, it's almost, even though it's not like he's doing, you know, Emmy Award winning work necessarily here, but I'm really appreciative of the job that Owen Wilson is pulling off in this episode and in the series overall. He's about as likable as I've ever seen Owen Wilson in anything, you know, either be a Wes Anderson movie or whatnot. And again, I think at this point in this episode, it's because we know the truth of what he probably really is, that he actually had a life and a family and a whatever, and probably loved to jet ski. And that tragic aspect is what's really feeding everything we see with him, especially after this scene, because he seems like he dismisses Loki saying the TVA is lying to you. But we know full well is like, oh, you know, the next time he's having a conversation with Ravonna, he's going to start, you know, prodding or trying to find some way to figure out if there's possibly any truth to that. And the fact that he actually ends up switching the Tempest to find out the real truth is just like, oh, there you go. Did you enjoy the fact that Loki ends up just being stuck in I called it a Sith loop?
Yeah, that was pretty funny. Memory prison.
Yeah, it's one of those things that it's a concept I've seen before, where someone is trapped in a memory that keeps repeating over and over, and that's kind of like their hell or their torture. I've seen it in a lot of things. In Preacher, I'll use that so I can just use a different TV show for an example. Finally, the way that people are kept in hell is they are basically repeating the same bad memory over and over and over. So it was kind of reminiscent of that, actually. It's also just to note, Sif, the actress is Jamie Alexander, and I know people, they recognize her from, you know, the Thor movies, of course. I just also wanted to point out, you know, just because we've been down this road with that character before, that she's not only appeared as that character in the Thor movies, or at least the first two, she also showed up in two episodes, and I remember them, of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So this is not her first time on the smaller screen. Just saying. Not that anyone cares, but I'd like to bring it up.
So how do you think this memory prison works? Like, you know, like, what is it? And it's like, you know, like a holodeck. I mean, or like some kind of like a, you know, time, because it doesn't seem like likely they just like send them back in time to this like moment and then just like keep unless it just like resets that moment at the end each time. I don't know.
I didn't think it was being sent back to that moment in time because of any potential of disrupting or changing time. Now, it was interesting because he did seem to affect her at times where she would stop or pause or whatever, but then she would eventually kick him in the balls anyway. So I think it's more like what you were just saying. It's something more along the lines of a recreation or a holodeck kind of an idea, which would also explain why when unless I'm remembering this wrong, I only watched it the one time, which would also explain that why when Mobius appears later on, she doesn't come right back in, right? And because she usually comes in, has her little interaction with him, kicks him in the balls, and then walks out, and then comes back again. So you have a, you know, it's like comes out one end, comes out, you know, exit stage left, enter stage right, or vice versa. I can't remember. And then that stops when he's there. So I figure that it's almost like pausing the program, so to speak. That's just my interpretation of it, but I think that's an interesting point for an organization which is all about, you know, basically traveling through time. It's like this is actually more of a recreation rather or memory, as you say, but not something where he could actually change anything. So interesting. I'm just sifting through my notes because obviously I've been bouncing back and forth. Oh, I've already mentioned about, but and Mobius, and again, one of my favorite things in the entire episode is Mobius's realization that it was Loki love that set off the Nexus event. I just thought that was really great. I'm skipping past the part. Look at me being so smart. It's like, oh, I'm sure he's gonna talk to Ravonna and gauge her reaction. That's how he'll know it's all a lie. It's not exactly what he ends up doing, but it's close. It's in the same ballpark. I wasn't too off there. So let's switch over to, I guess, at this point in the episode, something pops up with Hunter B-15. So my question is, it was late in episode 2, right? All the fighting in Rocksmart and stuff. So she was taking over different people's bodies when fighting with Loki. You know, first was Hunter B-15, then it was, you know, other people who were just probably just customers in this. One was an employee and one was just like a customer in the store or whatever. So my impression is from the way Hunter B-15 was acting at this early on in the episode that somehow during that possession or enchantment, I guess we can call it, that somehow that in some way that exposed her in at least to some veiled version of the truth, because she seemed to be questioning things from that point on until we get to it later on in the episode. So I thought that was kind of an interesting idea, because I was like going, I wonder what it was about that made her kind of be like, she just, you know what I mean? She just seemed off from the get-go in the episode.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering why she was seemed so pissed off, rattled. But then, of course, it made sense after that.
Right. I also found that, speaking of things that seemed a little bit off, is during one of those scenes between Ravonna and Mobius. It's the part where she ends up giving this little speech. And the speech is about the importance of maintaining the sacred timeline, but she talks about how she's fighting to protect her kind of odd and still platonic friendship with Mobius. It was such a weird, speech. I was like, what? I was just staring at it. I'm not lying. That was one of there's a few things in the episode I remember I hit rewind back for, and the other ones were for much cooler reasons. I rewind that back because it's like, did I miss something? Was that just a really weird explanation, speechy kind of a thing? And I went back and watched it again. Like, no, it's weird. It's strange. I love the fact that I don't like her right now because I'm not supposed to like her. And I'm like going, she's really a bad person. But, and one of the things I really liked about, just flipping back to Loki and Loop, I think the thing I really liked in it, and also it's interesting because what we were just talking about it, whether it being a hologram or a recreation, whatever, is the fact that, and it made it much more interesting as a result, that Sif was not only going to come out and say the same three or four lines, you know, kicking the balls and leave, that she could, he could change things by the way he interacted with her. She could say different things to him. And I think it's during one of those points where she says the thing about him being alone. And I like the fact that not just that that really hit home for him, it kind of made me take a step back and I realized, you know, the way, particularly with the revelation we got about the true nature of all the people who work for the TVA, not to be kind of sappy sounding about it, I think that's what everybody in the TVA is technically suffering from. They're all suffering from loneliness. Because I think the lives that we see them at with the TVA, that is their life. There is nothing else. You know, I don't even know if they are aware that they even sleep. You know, it seems like that's all there is to it. And which is, you know, sad. Oh, I had to ask, because it seems like they keep using, and again, some of my confusion is also because I remembered things I said in a previous podcast, which were taken from the comics as opposed to the show. And I was like going, wait a minute, is pruning the same as resetting or deleting or what? And then I was like, wait, is pruning just killing them outright, whereas resetting would be, they would actually be reset? Although I thought resetting was like deleting. I got a little confused about that.
I mean, I think it's the same thing. They just use a different term this time.
Yeah. I like the idea of pruning. I like because pruning is like, you know, like when you're trimming, you know, trimming a tree. So you'd be trimming the branches. And since we're talking about the variants causing these nexus events that are branches in the timeline, then I see, I guess, why that's why they would use a phrase like pruning. It does seem to be a very odd thing for the timekeepers to extend an invitation for, though. Like, hey, Mobius, we're going to finally reward you. Come on down so you can watch us kill somebody. Just seems a little strange to me. But switching back to Hunter B-15 and when she finally does have that scene with Sylvie, I was curious what you thought about that. She takes her and they're outside in the rain in front of Rocksmart again, and which just adds a nice little texture to the scene, whatever. And Sylvie has her experience, that memory, when she's telling her the whole thing that, you know, you actually had a life, you had memories, it's the one memory I could, whatever. I thought it was a very interesting choice that we don't get to see the memory, that we only experience her experiencing it. I thought that was a very interesting choice.
Yeah, I kind of wonder if they shot a scene and then just like the actress was doing such a good job, they just decided not to do that or not. But I do like the way they did it.
I had that. That's a great thought. That's a great thought. And I almost wish they had little like behind the scenes things for each of these episodes, or maybe they do somewhere. They might be online or something. Cause I'd be very curious about that. Cause I could totally see that happening. And then in the edit, that's where editing comes into play. We realize, no, we don't need that. And actually it would be cool to hear that, because that means they probably would have, cause if they had to shoot on an entire thing, it's like, okay, we just spent several $100,000. Nah, we're not going to use that. You know, it'll be a deleted scene on a DVD that people don't even buy DVDs anymore. So who cares? But, I thought it was an interesting choice. And I said from the very first episode, I was really happy that they got this actress to be on the show because I really liked what she did on Lovecraft Country. And I'm very happy that we had an episode like this, which really got to give us a better showcase of what she can do, instead of just being like the hard ass that we had seen her in the first couple episodes. And then again, you don't go and hire someone to do that and then not have them have like some really great scene work at some point in the series.
Right. Yeah. Really good stuff.
And speaking and with him, I'm sorry, with her seeing her memory, we also, like I mentioned before, it's around the same point in the episode, or near it, where Mobius, after switching the temp pads, actually sees what happened to Hunter C-20, which is just, you know, pretty much rocks his world, because he realizes, okay, everything that Loki had said must clearly be true. And that's when he goes and gets him out of the Sith loop. And then, of course, you know, our moment of victory is very short lived, because they come out of the portal and Ravonna is there already with the other time cops or Minutemen or whatever we want to call them. And this is when we get the first truly massive shock of the episode, I would say. When they kill Mobius here. Obviously we're dealing with a show that's all about jumping around time. So there's any number of ways we could still end up with a Mobius, you know, by the next episode. I understand that. But in the moment, I was like, you know, all caps, OMG, did they just kill Mobius? Because I was shocked by that. I was genuinely shocked by it.
Yeah, I totally wasn't seeing it at all, too. Really, really nicely done. And yeah, I had the same thoughts afterwards where I'm just like, well, is there a way they can bring him back and stuff? But they really haven't, like, done that. And this show, with their time travel stuff, they haven't just, like, you know, went back and changed something. It tends to be, like, the kind of thing where they're just, like, you know, the damage happens and then they just, like, you know, fix it down the line, not just, like, going back and, like, stopping the damage from happening after it happens. So
right.
I didn't really know how they're going to do it.
I feel, and I don't really want to get ahead of ourselves because I really want to talk about it. I want to talk about the end at the end, but I feel what happens at the end gives credence to the fact he could still be quote unquote alive. But we can get to that when we get to that because I'm so excited to talk about that, but I'm holding on to it till the end. I'm holding on to it. The last thing I just want to say about his death here, and it was the other note I wrote because I'm an asshole. I wrote, who would have thought mentioning a jet ski would be so moving? and then I actually wrote that. It's a show about time. I'm sure this can be changed too. So, swinging back to the Ravonna character, and this is as we're going to, before we get to the whole scene with the timekeepers and everything. Although I think you could say if you didn't think of her that way before this episode, throughout this episode, we can see her as a villain at several junctures. Whether it be the flashback of her snatching Sylvie, whether you were perceiving her constantly lying to Mobius and then actually ordering his pruning and then, you know, as well and having him killed, or later in the same scene, putting out an alert to hunt down Hunter B-15. These are all obvious, especially having Mobius killed, obvious moments of, oh my God, she's a total fucking evil villain, whatever. But I'm going to say, it's the moment on that, I guess it's an elevator or something, when she says, I don't remember. When Sylvie asks her about what was the Nexus event that she had caused as a child that led to all this. The way she says that and her attitude and everything, I went, ooh, I don't know why, but that feels worse than everything else. And again, I was still in a bit of shock after seeing Mobius get killed, but that seemed the most using the word insidious. That sounded like the most insidious thing she did in the episode up to that point.
Yeah. And I wasn't even sure if it was deliberate or if it was just like, you know, she's like literally done like so much shit she just doesn't actually know. Probably some of both, you know.
Right. Actually, you'll appreciate that. You of all people I know will appreciate this. I kind of had almost a Don Draper flashback of him with Ginsburg in the elevator, just saying, I don't think about you at all. It was that cold, but just more evil. Oh God, my side's hurting now. Okay. Let me take a sip of this. So the thing was here during the scene with the timekeepers. First of all, I don't think the revelation that the timekeepers were pretty much total bullshit was really a surprise. I think we've kind of known that. I mean, the fact that they turn out to be like these weird animatronic things or something. You know, they might as well be singing It's a Small World After All or something. I don't know. But Loki getting pruned, that was kind of a surprise.
Yeah.
The only good, what was cool, I mean, if you want to call it cool, the cool thing about that moment, I actually went, oh my God. And they're like, oh, this means they definitely can bring back Mobius. So I just had, it's like those two thoughts were just linked, whatever.
Right.
And I remember, because it was at least a couple beats late before then, I was wondering, like, wait a minute, we didn't see Sylvie kill Ravonna. What's going on with that? It's like, no, you let her get up in order so she could kill Loki. I personally, because I get obsessive with in a script about worrying about like the slightest little detail that someone would question, like, well, why wouldn't blah blah blah. My question in that moment is like, Sylvie just was on top of her like she was gonna kill her, then what? Then she just gets up and goes over to Loki instead, doesn't finish the job. That seemed a little strange to me. I'm letting it go because I don't care. But it was it was one of those things, if you go back and you watch it, like, well, why wouldn't she have taken care of business there? It seemed a little strange to me. Slight flaw, but I don't care. So you have all this at the end. And I was like, okay, we are more than halfway through this series. There has got to be a post-credit or mid-credit or whatever you call it scene in this episode, especially after what we just fucking saw. And then we get it. So we get Loki. He wakes up in, it looks like a somewhat apocalyptic cityscape. I've heard some people out there say, ooh, there's, you know, they see Avengers Tower, it's destroyed. After I heard that, I went back and looked. I didn't actually see that myself, so I'm like, I don't know about that, whatever. But more importantly than the destroyed buildings in the background, it's the fact we have these multiple variant Lokis looking down at him. And, you know, you've got the kid Loki, who, as I understand, is actually taken from the comics in the last 10, 15 years. There is a character like that, something connected with Young Avengers and so on and so forth. You've got some weird little, I don't know, we'll go for the alliteration and call it Lizard Loki. It's in his lap, whatever. There is another character, and I think, oh, the credits have him listed as Boastful Loki. Odd looking guy. Looks like he's wielding some sort of weird, almost steampunk version of Thor's hammer. And yes, I wanted to say that I know I would mispronounce Thor's hammer, so I didn't even try. I know I'd mess up Mjolnir? Anyway, see, I couldn't do it. But the thing that excited me the most, it's number one, they got the actor, Richard E. Grant. I love the actor, Richard E. Grant. He's great. Every time I've ever seen him, like, oh, I love that actor so much. He's just, and especially when he plays, like, I mean, I've seen him play a variety of roles throughout his career, but when he plays, you know, any version of even a semi bad guy, it's like, oh, I love that guy. And he's dressed as the classic comic book version of Loki. I mean, it's straight out of a Jack Kirby panel. The horns and the way the yellow robes fall with the green. Oh, I got so excited by that, Dan.
That was so cool. Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure that some people were maybe likening it to, when they got to see that episode of WandaVision when they're doing the Halloween outfits. And so she sort of dresses up like the classic Scarlet Witch, or he dresses up like the classic Vision. But those things still felt a little, they still felt like they were Halloween costumey to me. They didn't look like these would be real outfits for a super, you know, and whatever. This felt more real to me. Like, oh, I am. And then my second thought, even though he was only on screen just for a moment, I am dying to see the next episode, of course. My next thought was like, Oh my God, Richard E. Grant would be an amazing choice to play Loki if there was, if we could go back in time, because he's just, he's perfect for that role. I love that idea.
Yeah, it's really cool.
So, by the time we get to the end of this episode, especially that, I mean, that was such a beautifully great little post-credit teaser scene, whatever. I guess the one of the remaining, because we have questions, you know, obviously what the hell is going on here is, has he been transported to a place? Is this where all the variant Lokis that they've quote unquote pruned have ended up? Or is this where all the variants have been pruned have ended up? Will we see others? Will we see, is it possible we see Mobius here too? Is it just Lokis? Is there more, you know, does that mean, okay, they're not technically dead or not? I will point out, and this is one of the things that comes in handy when you're an idiot like me and you watch things super late, so you have to have the closed captioning on. When I had it on, when Loki first wakes up, he mentions, questioning if he's in hell. The thing that people should know, I mean, it probably doesn't mean anything. He's not referring to H-E double hockey sticks. He's not talking about H-E-L-L. He's talking about H-E-L, which is a place in an area which is hell-like, whatever, but it's literally from Norse mythology. And it plays in, which is one of those things like, I mean, again, it probably doesn't matter because anyone who's watching and who doesn't have the caption, which would probably be the vast majority of viewers, which is assuming he meant, oh, you know, hell. But that's actually not what he meant. And I saw that and I went, that's a weird typo. And then I went and looked it up. It's like, oh no, he's actually making a Norse mythology reference here. Interesting. Okay. But it's also, it's funny because the scene, I think the scene that they were playing in the loop with Sif, and the story of that is also actually taken, if I'm wrong about this, well, I'm sure Jason will correct me, which I'm not making a joke. I don't mind if you correct me, Jason. Let me know. I think that is also something taken from, like, Norse mythology stories rather than, you know, comic books or the other movies. Unless they did it in the comics, but it's still, I think its original basis was in, you know, stories of Loki that he actually did, you know, was playing a joke or a prank on the Sif character and cut her hair. I didn't know that personally. I read it. So, you know, I can't say I knew that when I was watching it. But I was mentioning something about big questions. I guess one of the really big questions we have here overall is who is really pulling the strings at the TVA? And it's like deja vu for me and you in a Marvel series. We're again in that speculating about who the big bad might actually be. And we saw where that went with the WandaVision. We never really got a payoff for that. We go, oh, it's Agatha? Really? Is it really Agatha? We still don't believe it was Agatha. But we only have got two episodes to go. Now, okay, let's just put it out there. Do you think they're going to reveal someone else of a major nature is behind all this in the next two episodes?
I suppose it's probably, you know, the only thing that makes sense that they're just going to be setting up something else, but maybe there's something else. Maybe there's something more going on. Maybe they just won't do that. I'm not sure.
See, I feel like when at the end of this episode, when you realize that the timekeepers are not real, then you've got to tell us then who is behind this. You can't not right. tell us that. Now, excuse me. Now, I think the obvious inclination is to say, okay, if there's some sort of big cosmic bad or whatever that's behind this, it's got to be somebody who's more all about time. And I know the knee-jerk reaction, and it's not, and doesn't mean it's a wrong one, is to go and say, this is leading to Kang the Conqueror. Especially, and it's interesting because Kang the Conqueror has been officially announced, has been for quite some time now, he is going to be the villain in the next of all things, the next Ant-Man movie, which does seem weird to me personally, because I, even though my knowledge of Kang the Conqueror is limited to like maybe two comics I read a million years ago, but I know he's a big deal, I would have thought they would have saved him for a bigger movie franchise than the Ant-Man movies, but okay, fine.
Yeah, well, you know, and the Ant-Man was like, you know, one of the founding Avengers, so
that's true.
Even though, you know, a more serious Ant-Man than Paul Rudd, but it also kind of works out too, because, you know, I mean, Ant-Man was kind of like, you know, the one that realized that when he was stuck in the quantum realm, that like time wasn't happening there. So maybe, right. You know, maybe for all we know, the TVA is, you know, in the same place, since time also isn't doing anything there. So
that makes sense. And also, it's just to, I don't know if it really ties into the series at all. Should have looked this up before I was doing the podcast. I can't remember the actor's name. The actor who's playing Kang the Conqueror was the actor who played the lead character in Lovecraft Country. So I could totally see him, him going from big screen to small screen and vice and back and forth would not be a big surprise to me, especially in a show that already features at least one person from that show as well. So I could see him maybe popping up, even if I think it'll be almost more of a tease, maybe just for a minute or two, because obviously he's going to be a character in a much bigger project that's not going to be out for like another year or two. I know there's other possibilities. You might be able to speak to it better than I can. I'm going to get the names wrong. Immortus or something? Is that one?
Yeah, that's right.
Now, Immortus is, I'm just confused. So is a character, is his name simply just Immortus, correct?
Yeah.
The reason I'm confused, and I maybe after this podcast or when I feel like it tomorrow, I will go and do a little research, or a mutual comic geek friend will just hear the podcast and just let me know. Because there's a character on the DC side, also from way back, from back in the 60s, whose name was General Immortus. So I'm kind of curious, okay, who had Immortus first? the fact that General Immortus, I think, was connected to the Doom Patrol makes me think it was probably them first, because, you know, Marvel looked rip off Doom Patrol. I'm just saying. But I'm very excited that we only have like two episodes to go, and I'm like, ooh, I am dying to see the next episode. I'm glad that we don't get to see scenes from the next one, because I'm like, no, don't spoil anything about it. I don't even want a 20-second teaser. I just want to like prepare myself and put it on. I will stay up. It'll be like 3:01 a.m. I'll be like, okay, I want to see this, because I just want to see the deal with the Lokis. Because part of me is thinking, oh, are we just going to see these four, or is it going to be like I was saying in an earlier podcast? Are we going to see like 400 more? Are we going to see multiple Hiddlestons in here? There's so many things, ways they could go, and I'm giving them an enormous amount benefit of doubt and credit that whatever I think of, they're going to come up with something different that's probably better. At least I hope.
Right.
So. At least I hope so.
Yeah. Or at least whatever they do, you know, hopefully they'll execute it well, even if it's like something obvious. But
right, I think like other things that we've seen over the years, we don't mind you taking the obvious route if you pull it off well. It was like, you know, because I think at the end of the day, am I satisfied with it? That'll be the key. The problem, see, I love how I begin talking about Marvel stuff in a very positive way, and I'm going to end with a little bit of a negative, because now I feel like I'm being more fair and balanced. Wow, I'm like the Fox News here. Oh God, that hurt my rib. If there are any shortcomings to the MCU, they, much like a certain period of Stephen King novels, they're not great about ending things. They're not always. I mean, they pull some things end well, but a lot of times their third acts, climactic scenes, the way things end, kind of feel, a lot of times feel a little bit the same and generic and kind of like by the numbers, whatever. That was kind of like our issue with the end of WandaVision, even. Where outside of the vision stuff in that one specific scene, a lot of it felt like, it's like we didn't hate it, but it felt like a little bit of a letdown because it didn't have the originality that we felt had been really thriving throughout the rest of that series. And I think that kind of tends to be a bit of the case with a lot of their movies. Again, it's not that they're bad. It's not like the third act sucks. Like, ugh. It just becomes, it's always the least interesting thing about most of those movies. Not all of them. You know, the end of Endgame's amazing, you know, when they all, you know, turn into little sparkly dust or whatever. But a lot of them, it's kind of like, ugh. And the fact that WandaVision kind of ended on a, not, it didn't quite stick the landing as well as we would have liked. It did a good job, but it wasn't a great job. Right. Sammy and the Snowman, which I didn't like from the get-go, and the final episode just confirmed it. It was like, okay, generic fights, which feel like I could have seen them in a 2009 MCU movie and been yawning during, and then this awful last episode. And so I do worry, like, please don't fuck up the ending of this series. Please don't. Even though I know the odds are they will, I'm hoping that they don't. That's all I got to say about that. anything else that occurs to you before I move on to anything else?
No, I think that about covers it as far as I remember.
Sipping some beverage here. I think at the end of each of these podcasts, I've mentioned a show that I've been watching or I'd finished at that point. I actually do have a show that I just finished, but I'll only spend a minute or two talking about it because, not just because the show was actually first came out maybe 2 years ago, it actually was prematurely canceled, so it's almost worthless to talk about it to a certain extent. I finally finished watching Swamp Thing. So, hey, look, another comic book property. Unfortunately, there were only 10 episodes of it. For anyone who's seeking this out, if you didn't catch it when they re-ran it on the CW last fall, because it was originally done for the DC Universe streaming service, you know, which was a huge, what's the word, boondoggle or something? It just didn't work. They basically, every other show just is now on HBO Max, and that's just become a subscription service for like digital comics, which is probably what it should have been in the first place, I guess. But they literally canceled the show after the second episode aired, even though it was getting like amazing critical response at the time, and became one of the only reasons people were even subscribing to that service. I was not one of them. I think our friend Brian actually did see it on that service, whatever. So I've now watched it via, I had actually DVR'd some of it last fall. I actually had to watch some of it on the CW website on that I can access through my television, which is always fun to use. Not as bad as it was before. Maybe it's just, maybe the one that's on your TV is not as bad. Maybe it's not the seed crap, whatever. I would say I liked it. There are definitely things I kind of enjoyed about it. They certainly, for DC, for real dyed-in-the-wool DC Comics fans, they do reference a number of other characters. How well they do them, that's really based on personal preference. I'll mention a few of them really fast. They have a version of Madame Xanadu in here. Most people probably don't even remember who she is. I do. Did I like their version? It felt not really the version I was accustomed to, but I don't really care that much about that character, so you can do her any which way you want. She just felt like someone that came straight out of a True Blood episode or something. They did do a nice little job working in the idea of Blue Devil, who I could not believe they were actually going to have on the series. I feel bad for a close friend of mine who's like the biggest Blue Devil fan I've ever known, that he probably got, oh, I got to see Blue Devil in live action for like 15 seconds, and now never again. We definitely would have gotten more about that character in a second season that, as of right now, we're never going to get. And for me personally, the one that really, why I'm not being all raving about this show, because I was so disappointed by this, that in, I guess in two episodes, they do a version of someone who, you know, you have to really watch the credits or look it up on IMDb to realize, oh my God, is that supposed to be Phantom Stranger? I hated how they did Phantom Stranger. He's one of my all-time favorite characters. He's mysterious. He's all-powerful. He's practically cosmic. He's a character, unlike almost any other comic book character, his origins are completely, honestly, unknown. There's an entire comic book that was released years ago that was devoted to all these various hypothetical origins that were written by all the best comic book writers of that time, including people like Alan Moore. I think maybe Neil Gaiman was one of the writers. All these people just gave their own take on, oh, if I wrote the origin of Phantom Stranger, it would be this. So then we get this TV show, and we get this bland, paunchy dude who's about as interesting as my last bowel movement as far as a fucking character. I was very disappointed by it. The rest of the series, it's not bad. They get the feel, they get the mood right. There's a few standout performers and actors we've seen in other things, like Will Patton. Kevin Durand is Jason Woodrue. That's a very nice piece of casting. Kevin Durand, some people, you guys out there probably remember him specifically from season 4 of Lost, if I'm not mistaken. He's the guy who ends up Ben kills and ends up blowing up the boat and stuff. And Jennifer Beals, I need to look up how old Jennifer Beals is. I cannot believe how good she looks, and it, at least on my TV screen, it does not look like it's due to like any major surgical enhancements. She may just be blessed. I was like, wait, she was from Flashdance, and she looks like she's half my age. What the hell is going on here? Beyond that, I was a little iffy on the actor who played the Alec Holland version of Swamp Thing. But I really like the actor Derek Mears, who actually is Swamp Thing on the series. He's one of those actors you see every once in a while. He's like those big, weird, freaky, tall, bald guys who always seems to be. He actually, I think he's been in a few other DC things, like briefly, where he's like the big scary guy in prison character all the time and that kind of thing. Anyway, to finish off, I do wish there was a little bit more of a heft to some of the performers in it, but none of them are bad enough that the show didn't deserve a second season. It really did. It did deserve, maybe throw a little bit more money at it, maybe improve a little bit of the casting, maybe stop trying to follow the CW formula that seemed to pop up here and there, which can be a drag on their series. But unless CW or HBO Max decide otherwise, we're never going to see a second season of this, which is a shame. But it might have been worth at least a second season, I would say. That's it.
Sweet.
Alrighty then. I will start to draw that curtain that I pulled back at the beginning of the podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, and I really hope you did, you will probably enjoy hanging out on our Facebook page as well. It's the STVD podcast page, the Serious TV Drama podcast page. I've never made that mistake before. Like the page and join the conversation about shows like Loki and so many more. Basically, you can find us, the podcast, pretty much where most folks find podcasts, everything from Spotify to Apple Podcasts. And don't forget, if you find us on Apple Podcasts, you can also rate and review us there, which is always a nice thing. And you can also find all 316 of our podcasts over at stvdpodcast.podbean.com. And please, 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 please follow us on Twitter. I feel like one of the only things that really gives us any credibility is if we start getting our follower numbers up on Twitter. So follow us there at STVD Podcast. That's STVD as in Serious TV Drama Podcast. So we will hopefully be back at some point next week. I know, Dan, things are going to get a little complicated for you in the one of these last 2 weeks because you're already traveling.
Yeah, both of them, but I think we can figure it out somehow.
Okay, excellent. So we will be back probably within a week's time talking about, I guess it'll be the, it'll be the penultimate episode of Loki. And that'll be fun. And then the week after we'll get to that final episode. And I'm going to assume by the time we get there, then we will also, we'll be much closer to making a decision about how we're going to handle a certain, rewatch of a certain meth manufacturing man Albuquerque, right? Yeah. I'm still holding out hope I'll get more information about when certain shows are coming back before we get to that point. Otherwise, we'll just make a decision at that point. But that's a few weeks down the road. Don't gotta worry about it right now. All right. So Dan, thank you so much for, being here and being who you are. And I look forward to recording with you again next week.
All right. Sounds good. Have a good night.
Good night, everybody.